It's a new era in public education, and it's underway in America, the Age of Common Core. I'm Susan Stevens, and as part of our ongoing collaboration with the Rockford Register Star, we're going to discuss the new national standards that are being put in place in your local schools. I'm joined this morning by some of the people who really know what it takes to move into this new era of teaching, learning, testing, and evaluating. We have Dawn Graneth. She's president of the teachers' union around here. That's the Rockford Education Association. Erin Jarrett, superintendent of Rockford Public Schools. And I'm thrilled to finally be working on a project with a favorite reporter of mine, Karina Curry of the Rockford Register Star. Let's start out by learning a little more about what everyone's involvement with Common Core is. And let's start with Karina Curry.
My involvement with Common Core is that I have been talking with some educators, particularly down in Ogle County. I visited the Rochelle School District to do some stories about ISAT scores, and I spent some time with them as the teachers were working in small groups and roundtables to revamp their curriculum to prepare for the Common Core.
Okay, thank you. And Erin Jarrett.
Yes, Erin Jarrett here, and I'm just honored to have the opportunity to take part in this dialogue. I encountered the Common Core initially as a high school principal, and now as the school superintendent here in Rockford. You know, we're actively engaged with our partners with the REA, Rockford Education Association, to talk about how we can best follow the Common Core and achieve the best possible results for our students at the same time.
And Dawn Graneth.
Educators have been learning the standards, and we've come in, you know, start now that we've learned them, we have now had to take control of what the curriculum is going to be going forward. And that's the opportunity that we have working with the school district to be able to have teachers sit in small groups and now take the kind of big ideas and figure out how to implement those in the classroom.
Let's start with the questions. Karina.
I think a great first question would be, could you, one of you, please compare what the current standards are to what Common Core will be? What are the big differences between what we're doing now and what we're going to see in a couple years?
Well, a couple of things I really like about the new standards. One is that they're very skills-based, and I think it's important to acknowledge that there's no perfect list of knowledge items. And more, when you look at the way students learn and our teachers are able to teach, we're much less reliant on filling students' head with discrete pieces of knowledge. Technology has made that in many ways irrelevant. So what I like about the Common Core is it really focuses on skill development. Another thing I really like about the Common Core is that it is much better aligned with our high school standards. We had about a 30% gap in terms of proficiency for high school juniors and students that were a part of the ISAT. It was not because those high school juniors suddenly fell off the cliff in the old system and high school teachers weren't doing a good job with those students. Quite to the contrary, we had a standard with the ISAT that focused at about the 33rd percentile, and then we moved up and had students take a college admissions test, the ACT, as juniors, which was designed to be sort and select students for college attendance. So we had two very different standards. And so what I like about the Common Core nationally and at the state level, we're really taking some pretty dramatic steps to make sure the system is vertically aligned and that there is a manageable set of grade-to-grade steps that students embark on to succeed and ultimately leave our system college and career ready.
Done.
How I like to explain it to parents and to people that might not quite understand it is, it's changing from the idea of rote memorization to skills-based. And the example I use is when I was a fifth grader, we had to memorize all the state capitals and all the which capital went with which state. And now today, teachers are still teaching that, but they're teaching it in a way of, why did Springfield become the capital, or how did, why did it change from one place to another? And I think that's a challenge for teachers, is to get, to have parents understand that we're still teaching the facts and the information that's going around it. We're just doing it in a different way. And the standards are an opportunity to expand the skills that students need, Students now can go on and Google, whereas I used to have to go and sit in an encyclopedia. And so they can go and find out who discovered America, you know, and just Google, put that question in. And so now we need to teach them how to do that, how to investigate and how to apply those skills once they learn that information.
Just to sound like an old timer here, is there any use in teaching how to, you know, go to the library, open a book, look up something like that? Is that done at all?
Absolutely. I think skill, the acquisition of knowledge is a very important skill, and I think I really appreciate the way Don laid out the state capitol example. I mean, I really believe there is an element of teaching and learning that still does involve the acquisition of facts, because there's an efficiency in being able to access information. On some level, we have to be culturally literate. That's a term that E.D. Hirsch coined in the early 90s about this idea that we have to have some Velcro for knowledge to stick to. So we can't just be process-oriented and skill-oriented. But for the most part, teachers are finding great ways to do exactly what Don very articulately outlined there, this notion of adding context to those facts so that we have students that really not only understand the facts, which they could look up, but how to access that information and how to really process and utilize that information in a higher level thinking kind of a platform.
Something that you said, Karina, just about having covered what's happening in Rochelle and what they're doing in training, just makes me think the training that is going on right now and has, I'm not even sure when it has started, for teachers when it comes to how to make this happen. Teachers, administrators, everyone. Where do we stand? When did it start?
The district has been doing Common Core trainings over the summer for at least the last 2 years, maybe three. And that's just to introduce, that was the beginning process of just introducing the changes from what the Illinois state standards were to the Common Core. Now we're moving into the next phase of sitting down and creating the curriculum and the pacing guides and how to implement those standards in each grade. And that's where teacher input is vital to the ability to be able to take that information from a kind of a big global level and take it down into an individual classroom. And that's where we're really excited about working with the district about creating that curriculum and moving forward with not only creating it today, but also doing it tomorrow and checking up on it in 6 months and seeing where it's going to go from there. I think that's an opportunity that educators in Rockford haven't always had, and we're really looking forward to being able to take something that's nationally and bring it down to the local level.
So, Don, when you say working on creating a curriculum, that kind of goes against one of the big complaints and fears I hear about Common Core is national mandate. Well, how do you respond to that?
I respond that the local level is able to work with its educators to take kind of an idea in regards to how to implement the skills that students need. And we all need to, for example, learn how to read. But each individual district is going to be able to take that and say, our kids do best when they get inferencing or when they have to learn complex questions or however it takes. And each school is doing that by looking at data that they do on testing. And each teacher does that when they look at their testing that they're doing in their classroom. And so I think Common Core is an umbrella, and the district has the opportunity to create the way that it's going to impact students the most. And I think that's where we're focusing our efforts on with the district, in that the ability to create that curriculum and to be able to create those pacing guides is where it really is going to have the most impact on students.
Dr. Jarrett, where do you see the national, state, local lines here?
You know, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I think what the Common Core does is it takes something like the amount of knowledge we feel like a high school senior needs, and we can have the opportunity to work backwards so that we can ensure whether a child grows up in another state or any zip code in our region or any school or has any classroom teacher, we can have what Marzano refers to as a guaranteed and viable curriculum. We don't want that variable to change too much, but we don't want to lose the individual freedom an expertise that comes with individual teachers doing what they've been professionally trained to do. We don't want to create robots that are saying everybody needs to be on page 42 on Wednesday this week. And so we try to employ really high-quality processes based on the idea of teachers operating as a professional learning community, where we try to carve time out of their professional schedule to give teachers time to collaborate, to talk together about how they can solve these problems, whether it's during the summertime or whether it's during meeting time during the school year. We like to employ the concept, Peterson Waterman coined a phrase, loose, tight leadership, the idea that the national curriculum, there are certain things that we have to be tight about. There are things that are non-negotiables. But we also have to really value being loose on giving real professional freedom to our teachers. So we have to have great democratic processes that really engage our professional teachers in this. We don't want people to just mindlessly implement this. We want professional expertise to enrich the process. So I think our greatest challenge as a district is we have to give teachers time. They're very busy people. And so we work really hard to try to find time and opportunities for our teachers to really engage with how we can take that those general guidelines that the Common Core provide, which I think are a good thing, but make them really relevant at the classroom level. And it's an exciting opportunity for the REA and our leadership team to collaborate on a regular basis. And they've been wonderful partners.
I'm Susan Stevens, and we are talking Common Core today with Rockford School Superintendent Aaron Jarrett, Rockford Education Association President Don Granath, and Rockford Register Star reporter Karina Curry.
Can you give me an idea of how school districts are being supported, either through services or financially, with all of this? We're talking about all of this teacher training and things like that. What kind of support is available?
Well, the state has come up with a lot of different professional development opportunities, and the state pays for the assessment system, which is going to help measure. When we look at teaching and learning, we tend to look at it in terms of what do we want our students to learn? So that's a collective conversation about what the curriculum is, the Common Core. And then we have to have a conversation about how do we know if they've learned it. And that means we have to have a good, high-quality assessment system. And the state does provide both some training on identifying what the Common Core is in terms of what do we want our students to learn. And also they help pay for the PARC assessment. They currently pay for the ACT and WorkKeys assessment as well for our high school students, which is currently what we're using, and that may transition out, much to my dismay, because I like the fact that all of our students take the ACT right now. I think it's really meaningful for students, so that's one of my concerns that I have. But the state has provided some financial support and some training support, but a lot of the work comes down to taking those really general guidelines, that high-level guidance on what skills we want students to have to be college and career ready, and working very collaboratively with our partners, our teachers, who have the expertise to make sure they can take this information and make it very meaningful to our students.
Don, how have teachers taken this? I mean, from the start, it had to be a scary thing.
Change is always a scary thing, and I think we as educators, I remember when I was in the classroom and I was teaching fifth grade, and I went to talk to somebody else from Iowa, and they had completely different standards. And I'm like, why is Iowa different than Illinois? And so I think we are, the idea of having one student be able to move from state to state to have the same learning standards and ideas that they need to learn at a certain time is a positive thing. What we're always concerned about is, of course, implementation, and the devil's in the details. And that's been some of our concern in regards to Common Core, because of the assessments and the PARC testing that is going to be instituted next year, I believe. And so, but we are working with the district to help. When teachers can work on the curriculum and know what's going on in their classroom, there's going to be that ability to be empowered to teach. And I think the district is giving us the opportunity to work on that curriculum and to be able to give the power to the teachers in the classroom, so that then maybe it might not be as scary as it could be. So that's what our goal is over the next year or 2 years, is to create the curriculum and have teacher voice so that they can start to get ownership of what's going on in their classroom.
For people who might not be familiar, could you explain how PARC and Common Core relate?
And what PARC is? That's another.
So PARC is the mechanism we use to determine if the students are learning what the curriculum is. That's our common assessment system that is based on student growth. So three times a year, students will take PARC assessments, and kind of one in the fall, one in the winter, and one in the spring, and we'll be measuring not only year to year, but season to season growth for students in areas that the Common Core measures, like literacy and numeracy. And so we can see if students are developing in those skills. What I like about limiting that assessment calendar to three events, a couple things. One, I like that it's growth oriented. I think teachers really thrive in an environment where they are held accountable for helping their students to grow, but are not held accountable for things they can't control, like the student's home environment or the level of preparation they had going into the class. So I think it can really help teacher buy in if that is framed correctly. The second thing I like about it is it does limit the amount of time. We really struggle as a district trying to get good, accurate assessment data so we can inform teaching and learning. We call that formative assessment. We really want to do as much of that as possible, but we don't want to do too much of it because you can really start to take instructional time away. And so I think doing it three times a year gives the freedom for not only our individual teachers, but schools and teams of teachers that share common grade levels or content areas, time to plan and collaborate and share best practices in between to get the best growth. I'm very much in favor of rewarding and providing time for teams of teachers to collaborate together to solve problems. It's one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of systems where we pay teachers more money based on the growth of their individual students, because I want our teachers working together as a team to get the best results for all students, not the teacher in classroom 101 trying to get a little bit better growth than the teacher in room 102. I think teachers as professionals work the best when they collaborate to get all third grade students or all sophomore English students the best possible results. And I think we have a great partner with the REA in that mindset. I think they're very committed to putting the time and the collaborative structures in place so that we work together to get the best results on that PARC assessment from season to season and from year to year, so our students ultimately hit those growth targets when they graduate and whether they're prepared for the next grade level and ultimately prepared to go on to college and career when they leave us.
I think that it's good to hear what you say about the style of teaching. That's going, it's up to the teachers. But I think a concern that always comes up with something as massive as this is, are we going to be teaching to the test? Or is this built in to not allow that sort of thing?
I think from an educator standpoint, it's been a concern. Teaching to the test has been a concern, and we are constantly inundated with numbers and this, comparing ourselves to other countries. And so it's a easy way for politicians to be able to judge or to gauge how things are going. As an educator in a classroom, especially when I was teaching special ed, I knew that my kids were probably not going to meet the standard that a legislator, a governor, or somebody in Washington told me that this student needed to be at. But as an educator, I sat in a classroom with a student who struggled to comprehend his reading, and I said to him, I believe in you, and I believe in what you can do, and I know that you can grow. And he did. He didn't grow to the level that the legislator said that he should grow, but he grew. And I think that's where we need to focus on in Common Core, is that growth. Now, unfortunately, legislators don't always want to focus on that, because that doesn't make the headlines and that doesn't make it easier for them to legislate rules and laws that teachers and educators have to live with on a daily basis. But as a teacher and a person and a professional in a classroom where I know the most important person is the student, I know that I can make a difference in their growth. And the Common Core, at least, will a standardized instruction and curriculum will help with that across the district to be able to help teachers guide students in that growth. It is an issue that is difficult, but I think if we look at it as in the individual classrooms, I think teachers can really appreciate the fact that they're looking at growth versus national test scores.
Susan, if I could just interject as well, I really appreciate Dawn's emphasis on growth. And, you know, what I like about growth, and when Dawn used that example of a student that's significantly below grade level, we really start to shift to a mindset where time becomes the variable. I think we have to be really honest about the fact we do want all of our students to be college and career ready, and we want to get as many students as possible over that bar, because 70% of jobs, according to the Harvard Pathways Prosperity Study, which is a pretty prominent study, said of new jobs coming forward, there's going to be some type of post-secondary education required for about 70% of our students. So we do need to get as many of our students over that bar as possible, but time needs to be the variable. And so when we look at a growth mindset, it's not about where students arrive. It's about knowing that there's a huge value in providing time for our students with teachers, and the magic happens in the classroom, as Dawn described with the student she worked with there. Another thing I like about the Common Core that I think is an important point of consideration to avoid teaching to the test is we're talking about skill development, not memorizing facts. I think when we think of teaching to the test, when people are thinking of that construct, I think a lot of times we are looking at what Dawn described earlier, a states and capitals test, where we can just drill our way to the students knowing the 50 states and capitals, and we know that's good, that discrete skill is going to be, or that discrete set of knowledge will be on the test, and we just go and go and go on that. And oftentimes there's a concern that other important things will be missed because we're so concerned about what's on the test. What I think we have the opportunity with Common Core to do is to acknowledge that it's not about any one set of facts. It's about the skills we develop in encountering and working with those facts. So I think it becomes almost impossible, if you're doing things correctly, to really teach to this type of test, because it's not about memorization of facts. It's about applying a skill base that will help students to successfully move to the next grade level, and to apply that also horizontally to different content areas that they're studying. So hopefully some of those math applications and skills will carry over into the science classroom, or even into the English or social studies classroom. So, you know, I think there are a lot, because of that de-emphasis on rote memorization and an emphasis on skill development, I think teaching to the test becomes less of an issue. And I think the growth mindset really leads us towards time being the variable, not where a student arrives in terms of accountability, which is always a big part of assessment as well.
I think oftentimes when, you know, big changes like this take place, it causes some parents to, you know, kind of reassess what they're doing at home. Do you guys have any suggestions for parents when Common Core rolls out and becomes much more significant in education? Different things that they should be thinking about or doing at home to help supplement what's being done at the school?
Currently at elementary level in Rockford, students are assessed on a standards basis report card. And so parents from elementary teachers have sat across from each other and have gone through the standards that their students are going to be assessed on. And so there has been over, and I believe the standards base in Rockford has been there for 5 years, 4 years. So there has been a learning curve for teachers, you know, with parents as they've gone through the elementary system of talking to teachers about what standards are and why or how students are not meeting those standards. I think teachers are going to have the opportunity during parent-teacher conferences to be able to sit down and explain the differences going on, because this is going to be a change. And parents might, you know, they remember how they were educated and how they were taught, and that is, they're going to be like, why are they doing this? Why don't they get an A? Why are they getting a 4? Why are they, you know, why? And I think it takes an opportunity, parent-teacher conferences and things that are going on in the individual buildings give an opportunity for parents to come in and say, you know what, this is, instead of learning out why the state capital is there, we're learning how it got there. And we're also learning, you know, multiplication facts, but we're also learning how to implement those in when we go to the grocery store and we buy 2 loaves of bread. So I think it's conversations with parents, and I think educators have them all the time. And I think in elementary, it is an opportunity for parents and to sit down and talk about how standards are being assessed in their classroom. Middle and high still use the typical grading schedule that we all grew up with A, B's, and C's. But I think it has given a baseline for parents to understand that standards are what are being assessed.
I would just add some specific things I think are important where parents can really partner with us. You know, Dawn, I think, really did a great job of describing how teacher-parent communication is so essential to the relationship. But just some simple things I think are really important to help teachers succeed with the limited time that we have. One is children need to read. You know, I just think if there's one thing academically I would say is we want students to learn to love to read and to, you know, just dive deeply into books they're interested in. And I think that's such a strong skill. I think students, when it comes to math and reading, a lot of times students think they're kind of innately born with skills in that area. Well, I really believe in most cases it's about practice. It's about putting the time in and hopefully following a passion. Two, I really think our students need to be physically active and fit when they're at home. And I think when parents can help us by helping support good nutritional choices and making sure students are active and they spend time playing outside. Now, I'm not saying that they should play outside on a cold day like today, but you know, we just, students being active is important. And three, parents really can help us by setting limits. You know, I don't think it's great for students to spend hours and hours in front of television and video games. Those are all good things in small doses, I think most parents allow. But I think we have issues sometimes with student attention span because we don't set limits in the home. And so I'm speaking as a parent, three things that I really try to emphasize are those three things. High level of activity, you know, getting off the couch, making good nutritional choices, reading a book and structuring some reading time and having those kinds of conversations at our dinner table, and really setting those limits that, hey, this, there isn't an unlimited amount of time you're going to get on your little phone or iPad or computer screen, that, you know, sometimes we've got to get out and play and we've got to not have unlimited time to do those things. I think that's a huge part of the partnership, and we encourage parents to take us up on that. I think they'll be very pleased with the results if they emphasize those areas.
What are some of the specific differences? I hadn't heard yet about the 1, 2, and 3, and 4 kind of grades. What other specific differences where the a parent's going to say, that's not how I went to school?
I think that some of the changes are going to be in what the kids are coming home with their homework. So instead of a worksheet on math facts, they're going to be coming home working on a project. And so there might be more things that need to be done at home that maybe not have time to do in the classroom. Another way that the parents might see a difference is having, you know, more conversation with the parents. So coming home and saying, two of my kids came home and they were asked to go interview a war veteran for Veterans Day. And so they went and talked to the neighbor across the street, and they got to learn all about that. And I think then they went back in and they did some more research on Veterans Day, and they researched where he had been at in the war and stuff like that. So I think there's going to be more partnerships between the teacher and the parent. I can see it as a parent that the teachers are asking more of our time at home, which is good because then it started a conversation with me and my children in regards to my father-in-law who had passed away but had been in the war, so we got to talk about, all brought out pictures, you know, and so it turned it into a night of talking about something from a project that they were bringing home from school. So as a parent, I see the differences, and I think as educators, we have to inform all of our parents about the changes, and it is going to be a learning curve, and there's going to be some, why are my students not getting this standard, And it's going to be something that I think we can work with the district on in creating different ways of informing parents about how this change is going to be implemented.
No, I would just add as a parent, one of the things I enjoy about standards-based grades is I think when you look at an A, B, C, D, F system, oftentimes it's an average of some type of a percentage of cumulative points collected throughout the semester, which we all kind of assume is a valid and high quality system, but in many cases it doesn't really tell us the whole story. What I love about sitting down with my teachers in the Radford Public Schools during parent teacher conference time, when we break down report cards in a standards based way, sometimes in fact they'll even let my children lead the discussion, which is really innovative and I think a great practice. you know, we don't talk about what that my son has a 92% in English or language arts. We talk about growth targets and how he's developing in very specific skills and areas according to the standards that are laid out. And I think it's a much more meaningful conversation because we get to that next layer. We don't talk about how our students are doing in terms of a percentage of points in a subject. We talk about how close to mastery my children are in a specific skill. And I got to tell you, as a parent, that's really helpful. It's a whole different level of communication that our teachers lead us in at that elementary level. I think it's really, and high school teachers do it too, but it isn't necessarily accomplished through just giving that letter grade. There's a lot of unpacking that has to occur. And so what I like about this elementary system is it really sets the table nicely for some very informative conversations, which I think are the cornerstone of good teaching and learning, is engaging the student and the parent in the child's learning.
How does this relate to the benefits for intervention at a younger age? Because doing these assessments at a younger age is able to let educators get a better idea of how students are performing and then react more quickly?
Early intervention is essential. One of the things I'm really proud to report, we've done some internal analysis of our data, and when you look at Rockford Public School students, 93% of our students that are meeting the current standards, that are at or above grade level for literacy in third grade, leave our system at or above grade level. So our teachers do a really wonderful job, but it points to a need for early intervention. So we're not only investing in early childhood experiences and working with community partners to increase access for early childhood, because so many of our students that aren't succeeding start off kindergarten significantly behind. And so we really encourage the governor's desire to invest more in early childhood, because it is not fully funded. It's not something that we can afford to do without taking resources away from K-12, much more than we're doing already. And so we think that investment in early childhood and that knowledge on a grade-to-grade level of what the gap is for readiness towards that ultimate college and career readiness standards for that a graduate needs to accomplish really helps good teams of teachers work together to set interventions to help our students get on track. And what we find is the best bang for our buck, the best investment, is to make that investment earlier, because the gap just gets wider and wider when you talk about the impact of poverty on students and on their and where they come to us. So whether it's an early childhood investment or really good targeted teacher-led interventions that happen in the early primary grades, I think those are great investments, and we want to continue to do more of it. And I think the Common Core has helped us better identify those students, but the real work happens not with just identifying. There's so many teachers, even without Common Core, can tell you who the students are that are reading below grade level. What it does do, though, is allow us to really formally identify those students, and then we have to find time for our teachers to give those students the extra time that they need to catch up. And that's a challenge. It really is. And it's something we're very committed to, but we know it's going to be a process.
What will the rollout with Common Core look like in terms of, what can you tell us what we can expect to see over the next several months, year, in terms of training and testing and things like that?
From an educator standpoint and working with the district, is that the summer we'll be having more professional development in regards to Common Core. We're also going to be setting up different committees or different groups of teachers that are going to be sitting down and working on how the pacing guides and how the curriculum is going to look. So it's taking a system that is there and changing it. So that's going to take time. So I don't know, I don't want to say it'll be done in 6 months, 3 days, and 5 hours, but I think it's something that we are constantly going to be striving for an implementation, because that's where the devil's in the details. That's where it's really going to impact the most students, is in how it's going to be rolled out into the buildings. And so some of the concerns that have been brought forth nationally have been the implementation. And so we're really going to stress with the district, and I think they're willing to listen to some of our concerns in regards to the implementation. And that is, teachers need to be there doing, creating the curriculum, being able to work with the administrators to how to best implement this in their building. And I think that's where we have an opportunity to be able to do that, to take some of those concerns that might be nationwide and say, in Rockford, we're going to do it this way, and we're going to work together to do that. So I think moving forward, I don't know of a timeline, but I know that that's where we're beginning right now to put those committees and processes in place.
Dawn, the process that Dawn highlights, I think, is so essential because, you know, when you talk about trying to have 1,800 teachers agree to some common standards and a common assessment schedule, there's really two ways to do that. One way we know doesn't work, and that is a small group of people in the district office write up what they think is the perfect curriculum, and then in a top-down way, hand that down to our teachers. We have decades of evidence to point to the fact that we will not get the best possible outcome if that's how we handle things. So what we're really excited about is through a lot, Dawn and I talk all the time, and we're really on the same page. We don't know exactly what this is going to look like, but we're in the process of developing a system where the teachers are going to be working collaboratively every step of the way to be engaged as professionals should be engaged on those really important questions of what do we want our students to learn and how do we know if they've learned it. You know, they have to have that ownership. And the way we give them that ownership is we have to build time into their annual calendar to do that. And so we think the secret sauce here is giving highly trained professionals a seat at the table and time to do that work in collaboration with the district. That may sound soft to some people, but I can tell you the top-down stuff does not work. And I think the collaboration will absolutely work and lead not only to teacher buy-in, but I think a much stronger experience for our students because we'll be relying on the expertise of 1,800 highly trained professionals as opposed to a very small cadre of people in a central location making those decisions. So we're certainly not going to cede total control of that process, but we're going to be at the table together partnering to make sure that we create something that that all of our professionals really can support. And I think that will avoid some of the traditional breakdowns that particularly occur in large systems. It's one thing to do Common Core implementation if you have a couple schools. Okay, the logistics of that are pretty manageable. If you start talking about 47 schools, it takes a real concerted effort on the part of the education association and the district office to build systems that allow teachers to have a voice. Because you can't just throw 1,800 teachers in the room and say, all right, let's talk this through. We have to have systems where we're able to do that in an efficient way, where people's voices are heard, but it can be done efficiently and effectively.
Practically, how's that done? Because I was kind of liking the idea of the 1,800 people just thrown into a room and just hash it out. But surveys?
Currently, what we have is we have a process called Instructional Council, and that is a group of teachers and administrators to meet, to sit down and discuss textbooks, implementation of programs, changes. And so we're going to use that umbrella organization to create this structure for the implementation of Common Core and also dealing with the assessments and answering the question. And the way I try to explain it to teachers is I was a fifth grade teacher, and I went one summer, and there were five of us, and we went and did the pacing guide for fifth grade math. There was four of us in a room, and we sat and did the pacing guide for fifth grade. So then the district presented that to the teachers that year. And in about October, I'm like, what was I thinking? Where did I come up with this idea on why would this be a good sequencing? And what I wish I could have done is I could have gone back and got those four or five of us in a room and said, you know what? This page really didn't work. Could we change this page to this page? And there was no process or structure in place within the district to be able to have that kind of discussion in October, November. But then what would happen again in the following summer is we would all get back together again and either recreate it new again or not have the same people in the room or not have some of the concerns that were brought forth. So now we're going to create the structure to be able to say, we're going to create the math curriculum, or the pacing guide for math. But in October, we're going to meet again, and we're going to talk about what's working, what's not working. And then in November, we're going to talk about what's not working, what's not working. And it's not going to be just let out there to hang on its own. It's going to be something that educators are going to, because we all know that, educators know that you're constantly reassessing and reevaluating how to teach kids. and this might work this year, but next year it might not work. And with the standards changing and with the implementation of Common Core, that is so vital to have that ability to go back and have that discussion again. So I think that's where the difference for us is going forward with the district, is that we're going to have those we're in the process of creating those structures to keep that ongoing dialogue moving forward.
I think what Dawn said so well there is that there often was a mindset that developing curriculum is something you do over the summer and you kind of check it off the list. And we're really shifting to a mindset where it's something that's never done. It's something that's a living document. It's something that we're constantly getting input from professionals in the field, and we're making little tweaks. What we don't want to do is constantly be rewriting the curriculum and the assessments, but we want to constantly be editing and tweaking and improving the curriculum and the assessments. And we have to build time in the teacher's calendar to be able to do that. This is not something that teachers have spare time to do. It's something where we really have to find time structurally to allow them to a good representative sample of teachers in each grade level and content area to do this work on an ongoing basis, and then go back to their respective buildings with feedback. That's how we think we're going to do it, as opposed to what Dawn experienced, which is some really well-intended teachers working with the district office, writing the curriculum and saying, here you go, guys. And then it's treated as a sacred text that is not to be changed, and we all know that professionals need that flexibility to continue to tweak and improve it as the year goes on.
Dawn, I wanted to touch back on your experience as a special education teacher. So you have probably looked at where special needs students fit mm-hmm. into Common Core.
I think the special ed students, ESL students, bilingual students, you know, all different categories that are different programs within the district, those are concerns for educators on how those are going to be implemented and correlated with the Common Core. As a special ed teacher, my student really struggled with comprehension. He could read, be able to read, but he could ask him a question about what he read, and he really struggled with that. So as an educator, I knew that I needed to be able to break down his reading in small chunks to be able to help him understand this sentence or this word. So I'm hoping the Common Core is going to be able to take some of those skills and bring them down to the special ed students' ability to be able to chunk and to be able to break things down. I think it's a concern, and it's something that when we do bring the teachers and groups of teachers together, that we are going to have to really concisely look at those populations, because they do have different needs than other students. And special ed and the implementation of growth is huge, because that is what special ed teachers were always frustrated about, because we knew that generally those standardized tests were not going to be an accurate assessment of what our students know. But I also knew that my student, by the time he left that year, he was able to take almost four sentences and comprehend what he was reading. Now, I know that might not sound huge, but as an educator, I knew that he came in barely able to remember what he read with one sentence. So to get up to four sentences was fat, and he could read chapter books now, and he couldn't read chapter books before. And so, but on the test, he really struggled with the assessments. But at the end of the year, he came up to me and he said, "Mrs. Granath, he had a Junie B. Jones book, and he said, I read this last night." And he was so proud of himself. And so the legislators don't see that, and they don't see that growth, and they don't see that. And so I think the Common Core will hopefully be able to take and transfer some of those growth into the assessments. But it's a concern that we as educators do have.
Is it, assessment has always been an issue when it comes to special education. Is it looking better, worse, up in the air still?
I mean, students that have eligibility for special ed are still going to be tested under the same model, but they hopefully will be able to have teachers go back through and work out some of the things that they have been successful in, some things that they still need to struggle with, that they still need to work on. But I think it is something that when legislators and other people that make these tests, they have to take into consideration that students, you know, they have an IEP, an individual education plan, for a reason. And they have, because they know that they need, we need to give them specialized instruction on a certain area. So we're hoping that as it goes forward with the assessments, that they take some more of those concerns into account. Their legislators, I don't know if they'll necessarily do that, but we're hoping and keep pressing to legislators that each student is its own person, not a test score.
It's difficult.
It is.
Is there a time when we will get a good assessment or feedback on Common Core in terms of where we stand as a district? You know, will it be a couple years from now, or do we already have feedback from what's being implemented?
From my perspective, a quick win that we received that we can already look at is the fact that they renormed, we're not taking the PARC assessment yet, but they renormed the ISAT test. And while to many people that may not sound like a win, from my perspective, it was huge, because we've really been lying to our students and our families in the state of Illinois about the proficiency of their sons and daughters as they take the ISAT test, because we had a very artificially low standard at the K-8 level, and then a very high standard at the high school level. And for the last 2 years, at least, we've had a real clear... We think all of our students can climb the mountain, but if it's a 20,000-foot mountain, we don't want to have them climb the first 5,000 feet, K through 5, and the next 2,000 feet, 6 through 8, and then make them climb 13,000 feet in high school. And that was kind of the way the system was set up. It wasn't. We really want to kind of have an equal increment system of growth, and I think that's where the PARC assessment will start to really pay significant dividends, because it will no longer be a low standard and then a very high standard once we get to high school. And so I think that's a quick win. In the long term, again, I can't say enough about the opportunity to start sharing growth data. You know, it's not about who starts out in the best place. And how we define a good school or a good teacher cannot just be based on who teaches the wealthiest students, or the students whose mothers have the highest educational attainment level, which we know has a lot to do with performance. We know those things really matter. But we also know that time with a great educator, any student can learn at high levels. And that's why I love the idea of celebrating growth. And so I think as the conversation shifts to growth, away from who happens, when you look at a clear proficiency target as the only measurement, which is what No Child Left Behind and the previous assessment system did, it really can be a demotivator for students, parents, and teachers who are struggling with more adversity. And growth is a real opportunity to celebrate progressions towards that standard and let us move to a mindset again where time is the variable, not what your zip code is. And I'll bet on our teachers and our students and our families all the time, if we can make the right investments and provide the right time to give those high-quality learning experiences as early as possible, I think we can close big chunks of that achievement gap. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we're heading in the right direction by shifting the conversation to growth.
Where do areas that are really important to some students, how are they affected by Common Core, such as music, art, gym class? You were talking about how important it is for kids to do this stuff at home. How are those affected at all, or what happens?
I think as educators, we are always concerned about educating the whole child. And so we strongly urge increasing art, music, and PE for all of our students. And I think the Common Core will be able to help implement, you know, to be able to combine those types of systems. Currently, right now, the district has applied for a grant to incorporate math and art in the middle schools. And they had teachers go and working with local artists and local people that are in the art community to come into the classroom to show students how art and math can work together. And we've started to see some increases in our math scores in middle schools. So I think it's a concerted effort that we need to keep at the forefront to not lose those programs and not to just focus on reading and math. Because sometimes that has been some of the biggest complaints that teachers have, is that all we do is focus on reading and math. And we know as educators that art and the music and just getting up and running around is what students need. And so we are hopeful and excited that the inclusion of this art and math program will be something that we could possibly do at other grade levels also.
And as an administrator, though, you're also dealing with, Aaron, that the money issue when it comes to sustaining these programs.
Yeah, well, we've made a big investment in Rockford in fine arts programs, co-curricular activities, physical education. Our board has committed about $6 million a year to support additional staff positions over the last 3 years to make sure we have a 7-period academic day in our middle and high schools. And just to give you an example of the impact, 3 years ago we had one orchestra and we had 3 bands in our middle school. Now all of our middle schools have a band and all but one have an orchestra. Why? Because students have time in the day. And we believe in the long term that's going to have a significant impact on what our students are able to achieve. It's allowed us to redesign our high schools around college and career readiness pathways because students have the elective time to pursue a 3-year sequence of courses that they would not, they just frankly wouldn't have had the time in a 6-period day. We worked with the REA to dig out of a little bit of a sticky implementation issue on expanding 30 minutes to our elementary schedule. And through their partnership, we really, I think, have dramatically increased the investment we're making in specialist time that our students receive at all of our elementary schools as well with that extra 30 minutes, in addition to providing our adults with some additional planning time. So we're committed to this investment. We think long term it's going to have a huge impact on the readiness of our students, because ultimately when you look at what the Common Core is assessing with the skills that are tied to literacy and numeracy, we believe that all of the academic disciplines that our students are involved with can contribute to good literacy and numeracy skills. And even in areas where it probably isn't as strongly on the surface correlated, like physical education, there are all kinds of great studies out there. A book that I would recommend anyone consider reading if you haven't yet is a book called Spark that talks about the brain research behind students having stimulating physical education experience and how that can impact literacy scores. Nearby Naperville is prominently mentioned in that book for some of the groundbreaking work they've done. And we really believe a fit children that have high-quality fitness experiences are in a very good position to be ready to learn, and that's a big part of it. So we think all of those investments are very important, and something that I think not only should suburban families and wealthy families expect high-quality fine arts experiences, we think all families should be able to expect that. And that's something we think is important as we really move to make the Rockford Public Schools a viable option for all members of our community and all children. We want to be clear that we're willing to make these investments for all students, and that those experiences will be really high quality, because those high school bands get pretty good when students start having band and orchestra experience from the time they're in grade school on up. It becomes pretty hard to catch up if all you're doing is offering that experience for high school students. And so those investments are not only going to pay academic dividends, they're also going to pay huge dividends in the overall quality of experiences and offerings for our students in our schools. So really exciting time to be in the Rockford Public Schools, because our board is making some of the right investments.
It's great to hear you guys talk about the way that you're collaborating with administration and with the teachers, with educators. It just sounds like there's a great partnership that's going on, especially, working with the Common Core, but beyond that as well. Maybe if you could just talk a little bit about the climate of, this partnership.
Let me just start by saying how much I appreciate, from the time I came in as an assistant superintendent, I've had the opportunity to work with Dawn and her vice president, Paul Goddard, and as well as the REA Communications Council. There are a number of key structures we have in place to facilitate regular communication, and we have great partners. I had the advantage coming in as an assistant superintendent, now the superintendent, of living and growing up in this community. And unfortunately, Dawn and I have both had years and years of opportunities to observe what can happen if the district side of the equation is unwilling to collaborate and work well with teachers. And so we really see this, well, I don't want to speak for Dawn, but I certainly see this as a very, very promising opportunity to work with people who have really extended their, you know, really extended themselves and put themselves on the line to build relationships and build a partnership. And I hope they feel the same way about our leadership team, because I don't know any other way, in the complexity of a system the size of the Rockford Public Schools, with all the challenges and all the things schools are expected to do, I don't know any other way that we can succeed for all students without a full, authentic partnership with the professionals that are on the front lines working with those students every day. So I think we have a really great start with that foundation, and I expect it's going to just get stronger and stronger over time. And I think Dawn and Paul and their leadership are a big part of that.
We are. We know that educators in this district have. We've had some past history that we are working to overcome, but we are see a willingness within the district to work and collaborate with all educators across the whole system, and so we are excited about that opportunity. And as Dr. Jarrett has said, we talk consistently about the need for teachers to have teacher ownership instead of teacher buy-in. He wants ownership of what the curriculum is going to be. And that is a huge change for us as educators, because there has not been that kind of discussion from past superintendents that there is currently. You know, I always say to them, we might disagree on some of the, you know, some issues, but let's find where we can agree on. And that is where we need to focus on what's good for kids and what's good for teachers. And the opportunities that we see with this administration to be able to sit down and have discussions about what's best for kids and what's best for how to implement this program is something that we are very excited about taking and moving forward with that. So, you know, we understand that there are going to be some bumps in the road along the way, because as change, with any change, there comes some little hiccups. But we have a clear lines of communication between us and our educators. We have different groups of teachers that meet regularly with administration. And so we're very hopeful that as things move forward, and especially with the implementation of this, that we're going to be able to heal some of those wounds and be able to move forward and create a school district that every student in Rockford will want to attend. That's what our goal. Our goal is the same goal. We want all kids to have a great education. And so now we're going to work on it together.
Okay. Is there anything we missed today?
No, I just want to thank you and Karina for the opportunity, Susan. It's been a wonderful chance to talk about a really pertinent issue that I think is going to touch the lives of our entire country, the students of our entire country, and the families that are there to support those students. So thanks for the chance to talk about something that we both see as really important.
I'm just wondering what the student of, once we're fully into Common Core, what that student looks like compared to the student of a couple years ago.
In an education, that's always the challenge of taking new ideas and seeing once where they come, because it takes so long, you know, 13 years to go from kindergarten to graduating. And so that's why teachers feel an ownership of what they're I call them my kids. They were my kids, even though I only had them for a year. They're still my kids, and they still are, and teachers want to know how things are moving forward. So I think as Common Core goes through and teachers start getting some ownership of what's going on with it, I think it'll help to have students know that they're going to be seeing and doing kind of the same thing from preschool all the way up to seniors in high school.
That was Rockford Education Association President Dawn Granite, also Rockford School Superintendent Aaron Jarrett, Rockford Register Star reporter Karina Curry, and I'm Susan Stevens from WNIJ. Thanks.